SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday. Happy Labor Day weekend. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, and if you're listening online at our website, stevepick.com. I said happy Labor Day weekend, end of summer, all that. I suppose we should also qualify the whole thing when it comes to South Florida that is bracing for the storm coming up the coast again, and expected to hit on Labor Day, and we'll see about. We took some precautions ourselves, Casey and Joe and Deja, for Monday, just in case. I'd offer this proviso right now, because if the thing should provide for difficulties in Broward County, there's always the chance that we get knocked out down at Margate. So just in case, we put together a potential show to put on from the studio in New York, actually D.C., the FM studios. And I'll just mention that now. And, of course, we hope for the best for everybody. Never pleasant. I read a story, actually, yesterday that about the, no, it was 1935? The 1935 hurricane that hit on September 2nd, Labor Day. Did you see this? I had never heard of this hurricane, and of course this predates the naming of hurricanes, but a devastating storm. That killed a big number of World War I veterans that were working, for like a works project. Even this is actually some sort of a project that predated the New Deal, but they were down there working in the Keys, building the roads, and they were slaughtered by the storm. And the stories you never—it's amazing, actually. Things you just have never heard of pop up. So, the best of luck, everybody. Hopefully, the thing somehow weakens and all that. So, if we're not here Monday live, you know why. And that, it would be too bad, actually, because for two reasons. Number one, it would mean that the storm, was bad and did real damage. And two, it's Labor Day and it's a big race day. I hate to be flippant, but let's be honest. Monday, Labor Day is always a big day in racing. And so we usually enjoy it because we, not only do we get to recap, but a lot of times Nick Tamaro will come back and we'll do Monday capping with Nick. And Johnny promised that he wouldn't go on a picnic or and we would have so many other reasons to be here on Monday. So let's hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. They let you get away with that. Thank you, Shirley MacLaine. The weekend is terrific, and we can only go up to Sunday for action, of course, because of the draws for the Monday cards, including even Philadelphia with the Smarty Jones and the Turf Monster and all that. The Turf Monster or the Turf Amazon? The hopeful will be drawn, and the closing day card, of course, at Saratoga and Del Mar. So, there's a few races that we can only hint at, and we'll see about getting as much of Sunday mention. I mean, the Spinaway, for instance, we're all set for on Sunday at Saratoga, as well as the Del Mar Derby and the Juvenile Turf on Sunday. The be aware on Sunday, too, at Monmouth, you got the Red Bank, which is a nice little group of seven, you know, going the mile on the turf, including Divisadero and some other very familiar names. And they got the two-year-old stakes, the traditional summer enders, the Sapling and the Sorority, and also the Safely Kept on the turf. So Monmouth with a nice four-pack on Sunday. And then later today, we'll see the closing day Saratoga action officially drawn, the Baruch as well as the Hopeful and everything else. And it is the Turf Monster, not the Turf Amazon. And the Dabunda Cup as well at Philly. And they've got the Bent Salem and then the Chamonix and the Roman Rachel. I mean, it's always a very good card. The Turf Monster is a grade three now, too. And I think this is, what, second year maybe? Second or third year even. But there's good racing virtually everywhere. And Prairie Meadows with a big Iowa bred day, for instance. And, of course, Woodbine, too. The Ontario Jockey Club, the La Lorgnette, for instance. Those are Sunday, the passing mood tomorrow. Canterbury's got a nice Minnesota bred card as well on Sunday. So we'll get as much of this as we can in. And, of course, the two big non-coastal cards tomorrow, Colonial and Kentucky Downs. And we'll feature both this morning, Kentucky Downs with Hammer on the grounds and part of the management team. And he's having an absolute ball. He called me fairly late last night. Was really excited about being there early and opening the course up for training. You know, the official training hours kicked off this morning. He put up a little video clip. So Hammer's all juiced up. He's having a ball already. He's been there less than a week. Or actually, I think it's a week, maybe a week. He might have gotten there on Friday. Yeah, he got there Friday last week. So it's been a week, and he's just... you'll hear in his voice how excited he is about being there. We'll also hear from Marty first after the first break. Get Marty McGee's take going into the season. We'll do plenty of stats and trying to help people decipher. They've got such an attractive wagering platform. Virtually every, as Hammer said the other day, I mean, virtually every race is a capacity field. They're giving away outlandish amounts of money. So you got big bulky fields, you've got turf racing, which everybody loves, and super competitive, but there are some repetitive themes and angles going into Kentucky Downs. I mean, there's certain outfits that are particularly strong historically at this meet, and it doesn't hurt to know, who they are and who might be poised for success. I mean, first and foremost, Mike Maker, who's won eight or nine races each of the last 3 years at least. Wesley Ward, certainly. Some people have come in and done well. Last year, Baltus won a couple of the stakes, and Nick Shares is actually involved, of course, in the Tourist Mile tomorrow. So jocks, trainers, certain scenarios and the unique undulating course design, including the uphill stretch, the most European of courses in North America, Kentucky Downs. Colonial, about midway, into their season, and the Virginia Derby, the Virginia Oaks, as well as a couple of nice supporting stakes, the Kitten's Joy and the Rosies for two-year-olds. Won a route, won a sprint. The Rosies is newly created and offers a 5.5 So we'll look at the Virginia Derby. I think Nick looked at it, and we'll get some colonial thoughts in as well. Jay Pridman will be with us top of hour two, and out at Del Mar, a few more imagine important maiden races. We'll also get Jay's recap of last weekend's action, both on the coast and here in New York. Get his Travers reaction and start to look forward to the season enders, you know, the big opportunities, plus the John Mabee. And Jerry Hollendorfer brings back Vasilika in the Mabee. She drew inside, gets a ground-saving voyage. Pratt back aboard. You got plenty of other familiar names. Brad Cox sending out Juliet Foxtrot. And she, of course, is coming off of the Modesty win at Arlington. And she seems like the other player, the other major player with Vasilika in there. Toinette, kind of a kind of an at-the-races house horse, one of our favorites. And Baltus has got Alicia's World, a little bit of a price this time. So the John Mabee tomorrow, the Del Mar Deb, and a couple of interesting numbers in here. Peter Miller with the blowout maiden claiming winner, Lakuthia, and John Sadler, and Custer Ronis with West Point, with that pricey big beast filly, Inspiressa, who looked good breaking her maiden mid-August. So the Del Mar Deb and the Juvenile Turf as well on Sunday. Maiden mile race, maiden going short as well on the dirt. You name it. The Del Mar Derby, which is always fun. A little interested or surprised, I suppose, to some degree, that there was not a sometimes you've had Chad actually has sent for the Hollywood Derby, and of course just last week you had Annals of Time, who had been a Hollywood Derby winner, but the Del Mar Derby with a lot of the familiar faces. There's also some recent converts to the turf, including Nolo Contesto, who was very good in that allowance race mid-August for Costa and Sadler. And interestingly, back again on the turf, Baffert has fully made Kingly. That La Jolla, it seemed like at that time it was just a spot to run him. But he wired that field, and he's back again trying to parlay the La Jolla into the Del Mar Derby win. So Kingly, and of course his brother, speaking of Kingly, right? His brother just won, the very expensive brother, right, for Cassie and Jack Oxley last week, whose name I'm going to have to go fish for. Enforceable, right? What kind of figure did that get? Now that I've made the effort to go look. Next question, 62. Speaking of some stake wins and two-year-olds, very satisfying, I imagine, for John Kimmel yesterday. And Kimmel, after the just silly disqualification of Chris Stally in his debut, in her debut, comes back and goes favored, 3-2, took all the money, and prevailed. Joel Rosario comes running late, breaks the maiden and wins the PG Johnson. Sweet Melania, who had been the morning line favorite off of her maiden breaker. But congratulations to Mort Toby and Chuck Hovitz. And Chuck had written me a really nice email. They were so excited about coming in for yesterday. And you can't even call it getting retribution, but just going ahead and winning. And, you know, it's kind of annoying, certainly, you know, to have had, a nice maiden purse, you know, what essentially is a condition, you know, taken away from you for no good reason. Not to mention, you know, $50,000. But this is nice. They get the stake win and the maiden breaker all in one. Two for one. And I didn't get a chance yesterday. You know, we were just so overwhelmed and saddened by Randy Romero's passing. We didn't mention fighting CB for walking El Thoroughbreds, Brian Hernandez Jr. And that was a very strange, with anticipation. There was all kinds of weird things going on, including Tuggle and he and our country, and they were at each other's throats. It looked to me like, didn't it look like, was it, did Tuggle try to savage our country? I think he tried to take a bite out of him, actually, on that turn when they were all the hurly-burly. We're going to start it with Marty McGee. Big weekend preview at the races, Labor Day weekend. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
All right, carry the four, plus this, I got that. All right. 26,876. What's that? That's how many races you could have bet last summer on ExpressBet. Haven't signed up for an account yet? What are you waiting for? On top of all those races, ExpressBet's giving away 25 million XB rewards points with promotions at Saratoga, Del Mar, and more. Plus, ExpressBet's Fun in the Sun Handicapper Tournament features $120,000 in prizes, including seats to the 2020 Pegasus Betting Championship. I know, I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you here, but here's one more. 500. That's the sign-up bonus you could get when you sign up for ExpressBet. So let's recap. 26,000 races, $500 sign-up bonus, $120,000 handicapper tournament, and 25 million rewards points. Hey, this math just adds up. ExpressBet is your way to play this summer. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Fun in the Sun is ExpressBet's summer treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the turf meets the surf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with ExpressBet. And while you're at it, don't miss ExpressBet's $120,000 Fun in the Sun handicapping competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $5,000 for first, $2,000 for second, $1,000 for third, and $500 for fourth. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, the top four finishers will win a Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seat, a $12,000 value each. ExpressBet account holders register free once to play all summer. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool, fun-in-the-sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet, Saratoga, and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete fun-in-the-sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you're dressing up, still it's not enough. You keep trying to impress man, he keeps bossing by.
We're back at the races, coming into 20 minutes as we kick off weekend preview at the races here on Sirius XM. And Marty McGee is ready to kick off the Kentucky Downs season. Lots of Kentucky Downs coverage this morning, including Hammer on site and patrolling the expansive turf course, the undulating turf course. Mart!
Bick! How you been, Bick?
I'm getting there. Better and better.
Have you been talking about your eye or not? Because I haven't really heard the full story.
I have. People have heard the details of this stupidity. This is the craziest thing. I've never had anything. I've never been sick. Literally, my entire life. I had never had anesthesia, Marty.
Well, you know, about 3 or 4 years ago, I had a cataract operation on my left eye, and for about months afterwards, I'm like, something's not right here. And the woman who did the surgery was kind of fibbing to me the whole time. I went and got a second opinion. The guy goes, get down to the specialist. You've got 7 or 8 retinal tears.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, did you have a detached retina, though? This is the
I
stuff,
did.
By the way, this is stuff old people talk about. You know, 30 years ago, if you had this show, we never talk about this.
Well, people have to be aware that you and me and Jay Pridman are all turning 60 in about 60 days. You know, collectively, the clock is going to we'll be the other side of midnight soon. And I had the exact same thing. The exact same thing, Marty. It was sort of obscured, and I said to Tina at the beginning of the meet, I said, something's not right. And finally, after 2 weeks, went over to the optician. He said, you've got a problem here, and you have to go see the retina specialists. And they were like, we're trying to get you in tonight. Get me in tonight for what? For surgery.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? I said, this can't wait till after Labor Day. And they said, no. Labor Day?
They laughed at me. I had 2 or 3, like, surgeries after that, so everything's
wow.
Good now. But you know, one winter I went down there to Gulfstream for however many weeks, and I had that going on, and I had a tooth where I had to have an implant, and then my ears were all messed up, and I was like, God, my head's about to explode. So yeah, I don't want to read my writing from that era.
We're getting there. We're a little past halfway on the recovery, and each day I'm seeing a little bit more. And by Breeders' Cup, I think I'll be back to normal.
Yeah, they say a detached retina is the bad thing.
Well, that's what I had.
Oh, did you? Wow.
Oh yeah, no, it was. I had a detached, and then it's funny. Every 2 weeks, I'm going for checkups, and every time I go, they tell me something else that they hadn't told me previously.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, another 10 minutes and I was going to be Helen Keller. It just, it's unbelievable. So, anyway.
All right. Gary, soldier on, Bick.
Exactly. It hasn't hurt I'll tell you what, it hasn't hurt my horseplay. I'll say that. I've been seeing the horses, but maybe like a spyglass focusing in more carefully, I guess. I don't know. Marty, we're certainly focused today on the opening of Kentucky Downs and the new management, of course, new ownership. Not a lot has changed, but lay out the groundwork for Kentucky Downs 2019.
Well, this has become a focal point for horse and fans alike for years now, with the gigantic purses that they have, maiden special races starting at $130, allowances now 145 and up. You know, they've got the first ever Breeders' Cup winning you're in this meet with the turf sprint on the Run Happy turf sprint at the Run Happy meet, by the way, on September 7th, along with the $1 million, first $1 million race they've ever had, the Kentucky Turf Cup. That's assuming Kentucky bred sweep all the spots, because, as you know, the KTDF is a major component of the purse structure. And it's sometimes a moot point, because a lot of times, unlike when you go to some other places, when they advertise the purse, a lot of times they really are Kentucky breds who win their share of the bonuses. So, anyway, yeah, it's just such a great place. We've got great weather in store for tomorrow. I haven't been down there yet, but I'll get there fairly early tomorrow. and see the layout there. I know that the Johnsons sold their piece to Ron Winchell and his partner, and I don't know what kind of changes they have in store, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So it's been humming right along over these past few years.
Well, and I think from what I can tell, and we'll talk to Hammer at 11 a.m., the biggest challenge, and he's kind of become kind of a catch-all exec in there, and some things are being slid over to him to handle. And one of the biggest problems they seem to have right now, Marty, is there not enough room in the dining room and in the seating for people that want to be there. An interesting problem to have.
Yeah, there's got to be a lot of demand. I mean, it's relatively small, the one little tent that they've set apart for the horsemen and et cetera. Maybe if they doubled or tripled that, they'd do that. But then they would take a little bit of the open air ambiance away. So I don't know. The one complaint I have about Kentucky Downs, and you can talk to Hammer about this, or you might have already. The sight lines are so poor because of the way of the layout. You know, it's like Belmont Park. They're just so far away from you as the viewer,
right?
And the television camera. And they had discussed before having a drone or some kind of I'm not a technology guy in terms of the camera angles, but at some point as you're watching these races, Steve, as you know, you kind of lose track of who's who and where they are. And if you just had a little bit tighter coverage on that somehow, some way, I think that would infinitely increase the viewing pleasure for the better.
Well, and the other part of it that to me, when I first started watching it, and in fact we ran Kicking and Screaming there once, and she ran a very good second, literally 4 days after she had run at Arlington, and the camera coming up the hill to the wire, and you know you're watching the horses rallying, and you think that okay, they're getting through the wire, and then all of a sudden the next camera picks them up, and there's like another 75 yards.
Yeah, that's the one thing. If they just had like a more smooth transition somehow, you know, I'd get the experts on that, Vic.
Well, and maybe that's one of the things that Hammer can dive into. Marty, dive into the approach that you like to take there, because everybody that is a serious player at Kentucky Downs has, you know, certain either favorite angles, horses coming in from certain conditions, and you know, obviously a lot of the trainer angle stuff really works here. Mike Maker has won, I just looked it up, 8, 8, and 9 races the last 3 seasons. They only run 50 races.
Yeah, it's 10 a day. There's no confusion about it. It's 12:15 Central Post. And there's 10 races every day. It's really easy to figure out. So, and 14 of those 50 are stakes. So, and I guess, I'm going to guess 10 of them are maidens and 10 of them are allowances, or probably even more than that. You've only got a handful of non-maiden allowance stakes races. So, with these big fields, anything you do practically in terms of betting strategy is going to be right on, because you're going to get big payoffs when somebody, as Toby Callett would say, in the belly, in the exacta. It's going to blow up your tries and your supers. The horizontals are always fun to play. You can get something like the Floyd Cobb winner that pays 200. You got to hit the all button to get that one though. $240 we had last meet. It's just they're coming from everywhere. It's the melting pot effect that we've seen for years at Keeneland, where you got them from New York, California, Florida. Everywhere else, Ellis Park is stronger than they once were, say 10 years ago or so. And so I would think that leaning away from the Saratoga horses, because that's always a magnet to the bettors, they invariably are overbet horses that have run at Belmont and Saratoga. And I don't know their win percentage, but I vaguely recall a few years ago they were underlays, bottom line. So I would think that the strong program that they've had at Ellis this summer, particularly with the 2-year-olds on the grass, you're probably better off maybe leaning toward them a little bit.
Well, and I'll go a little further. And, you know, just looking at last year, for those of you that are subscribers to DRF Simulcast Daily, go to the winner's book and pull up last year's meet. And you can, you know, basically you've got the primer from a year ago, and essentially the condition book won't be all that different. And, you know, the tendency, Marty, is for us, you know, from some anecdotal, you know, apocryphal kind of evidence or recollection, is that you should always be reaching for prices. In fact, last year, the vast majority of winners were under 5-1. And so maybe, you know, maybe the places to go looking for the prices is a little bit underneath. And, you know, certainly last year, using the template from the winner's book, the favorites and second choices and, you know, some of the logicals really dominated.
Yeah, that's true. I remember having written about that. And, you know, you would think, though, with the bigger fields, would come the higher prices, or at least a higher median or higher an average on a win mutual, but that's not necessarily so, which isn't necessarily a bad thing either for the horse players. They like form to hold. They want things to make sense. So if you have six or seven horse fields, of course your win payoffs are going to be lower than that. But we've had some crazy things happen down there, like the Floyd Cobb winner paid like $280 or whatever. But all in all, form tends to hold over that grass course. Maybe it's because they have, it seems like you don't have as much trouble. They've got more room to spread out and make their runs. You've got that real long stretch. It's almost 3/8 of a mile. And if you're good enough, you're going to get there.
Well, and I just, as we're talking, I counted up, you had 33 horses. So that's exactly 66% that were 5-1 or less last year, and 16 favorites, so 32%, almost a third of the favorites won. So, you know, don't necessarily just be in a complete rush to throw out the favorites and just reach for prices. One thing you are going to have to reach for is pedigrees, because there are a lot of horses that'll make turf debuts, the two-year-old, the maiden races. You might have a lot of horses coming from Ellis and Saratoga and wherever else, probably some coming up from Gulfstream, I would think, as well. Maybe Mark Cassie doing some of that and so forth. You've got to do pedigree work. And Andy Serling taught me this years ago. Andy would find winners, you know, obscure horses that were being overlooked that had lots of turf breeding. And, of course, horses that have been successful over the course, they obviously need a second look.
Absolutely.
Well, how about a couple of opinions?
Well, we've got an all-stakes pick four that runs from race to 7-10, the last four tomorrow. And I'm really, really looking forward to that. 14% take. Last year I looked it up. They handled like, I think, about 250,000. There is no pool guarantee, but, you know, those are kind of moot anyway. I thought that the first race in the sequence, the restricted one dreamer, and by the way, the purse is 250, and 150 of that is from the KTDF. But like I said, almost all of these, the vast majority, are Kentucky bred, is eligible for the bonuses, so it is not false advertising. I really thought that Lamari for Brad Cox would be less than her 5-2 morning line price. Her last two trips have been horrible, and before that she had won four in a row, and I know that Brad Cox has been real intent on getting her to break alertly, and she does have, and this is key as you well know, Vic, an open air outside box. So I expect her to get away alertly. She'll be less than 5-2, but I think she's a single. My only source of trepidation in this is that Classy Act really ran good last time, and his speed, and could entertain Lamari a long way. But I think with the positioning that Giroux's going to have, I think Lamari's definitely one to beat with Classy Act, the second horse.
Well, and you bring up, you know, you mentioned Classy Act for Joe Sharp, and coming out of a good performance in that Ellis Park event, the Kentucky Downs preview race, the ladies turf, and the one thing that is, should also be included, wiring fields here seems to be a little challenging, and Classy Act would have to, you know, I think to win would have to essentially wire this group. You mentioned Lamari, who makes a lot of sense, Cox and Florent Giroux for Don Alberto, Danny Pites, Smart Emma out there too, 6-1, and I thought Hanalei Moon was worth a long look as well, from Cassie. Was my other horse. So you and I are fairly close there. How about in the big $750,000 Tourist Mile?
I've always been a big fan of Parlor, and I don't know why. It must go back to one of his races that I can't see on the swarm, but it seems like there's enough speed in this race with CM Reap and the only non-Kentucky bred in the race, Great Wide Open, who's going to be fresh and surely he's going to be speedy. So I think there's going to be a faster-than-normal pace in this race, Steve. So I'm looking for something to come from off of it. I'm going to go with Parlor and the Cassie horse, who I really became enamored with at the Keeneland meet when he won a good allowance over Offering Plans, some other nice horses, first Premio. So Mr. Cub was terrific off the bench last time out for Ian Wilkes off a six-month layoff. I know that Ian was thrilled with that. The horse is capable of running triple-digit buyers. It's going to take a big buyer. 100 or so, I would guess, to win this race. But way wide open race. Hembry ran great over the course last fall and has subsequently improved for Maker. He's right on the fringes, too. I'm going to have to fade next shares. I know he's been running in grade ones and he's had trouble and all that, but it's just been a while since he really fired. So I'm against the lukewarm morning line favorite next shares when spreading with some of those other horses I've mentioned.
Now, and Hembry, you know, tough to ignore Hembry in here.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, I'm just looking. That was actually an allowance. Yeah, I tell you, that allowance, I had sort of forgotten about that, but that was sort of the jump-off point for him last year. And then he went up to Woodbine and won the Near Arctic and, you know, and everything else that has come subsequently, and he certainly has kept good company, you know, coming out of a little bit of a late interest in the four-star Dave, and just missed before that in the Forbidden Apple when Catherine Day Phillips came down from Woodbine with Mr. Haverkamp and surprised. So very good. Tourist Mile. And then the two-year-old races, Marty, which I thought were a little interesting. I ended up only being able to find one horse in each race, Fly So Pretty in the girls race, and I thought Nighttime might translate to the grass nicely for Dale Romans and Blue Devil Racing.
Yeah, that's one that you're talking about. You do have a number of these two-year-olds making their grass debuts at this meet, and that's one of them. I thought that he ran pretty creditably down at Ellis last time out behind the Asmussen Hort Ratty Yates. There are a couple of scratches out of the second races, out of the second one. Let's see here. We got, who's the morning line favorite in that race? He is coming out because he just ran.
Our Country ran yesterday.
Yeah, he ran yesterday, so he's definitely
or
come out. So
Thursday.
Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday. Doc Boy's coming out, according to Marcus Hirsch, he's going to run instead at Colonial tomorrow. So that the 8 and the 9 are coming out. So that makes it pretty wide open. I defaulted in here to the Maker horse. Are you kidding me? You're really remiss to leave out Maker if you're really going for something here. So I'd either save with him or go all in on him, because as we all know, he and the Ramsey's really point for this meet, and he's the all-time leader, blah, 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 with all that. So I thought that Are You Kidding Me ran terrific in breaking his maiden at Saratoga last out, so he's the one to beat in there. And then Cassie, he's really talking a big game on Fly So Pretty in the Philly race. So
okay.
And she's, you know, she had some trouble in winning that maiden race going short at Saratoga. So I'm kind of chalking out in these two, but I'm sure if I give it further examination, Lemon Scat, for example, a maiden winner over the Ellis Turf coming from behind, I'm sure that Dale and Frank Jones are high on her. She's a Lemon Drop Kid. Philly could become anything. So all kinds of options in both of these two-year-old races tomorrow on opening day at Kentucky Downs.
Marty, what'd you do in the sixth for those that want to play a pick five?
The sixth, I have picked AJ Rock over Wex with All American Jewel. So I'm just referring to my pick here. Wex is the one horse for Larry Jones. AJ Rock is the 11 horse. Just guessing with Peter Miller. Although Byron, by the way, Byron King, my colleague, is now making the line, or my former colleague, excuse me, and good friend, is making the morning line for the first time for Kentucky Downs. He has made the gray filly AJ Rock 7-2 morning line favorite for Peter Miller, who, as we all know, got real hot toward the end of the Churchill Spring meet. He hadn't done too much at Ellis Park, if I can recall. But, yeah, I've got an 11-1-12 with Michelle Nihe third there with All-American Jewel in the sixth race tomorrow.
Well, that's a daring selection because Conveyance doesn't have a win yet as a stallion.
Well, Beck, come on. There's a first time for everything, isn't it?
This would be it. My man, I love it. Let's see. AJ Rock, 7-2.
Yeah, that's what he's got, yeah. Hey, by the way, I just came across this. Cazadora, number 7 in the sixth race tomorrow for Calumet and Jack Sisterson, to be ridden by one Declan Carroll. What a meet he has had down at Ellis. He's like fourth in the standings with like 17 minutes. Have you had him on the show yet?
I had him on the show right off the break when he got his first win, and one of my absolute favorites, and I known him since, you know, he was running around the shed row right there at the 7 furlong shoot at Davy Carroll's barn, and just a wonderful kid, Declan Carroll, and he's got to stop growing. That's going to be the one issue. He can't get any taller.
Yeah, the more he eats, the taller he gets. So yeah. Yeah, have him on again. What a great kid.
I will. He's an absolute gem. Marty, this is always good. Always a highlight. One of the things that makes summer ending and fall starting, worth looking forward to. And we look forward to tracking the action. I see that Marcus is doing the lead analysis, and you are the one and only Hermes.
That's it. You know, we got a busy 3 months coming up in Kentucky with Kentucky Downs and right into Churchill with some real important races at their September meet. And then, of course, Keeneland in October and Churchill back again in November. So I'm sure I'll be meeting up with you again real soon, Beck.
Without fail. Marty McGee, everybody, DRF McGee on your Twitter machine. Let's take time out here. James Scully is going to join us. James, of course, was in Saratoga for Travers Weekend. We'll get some Travers recapping from him later, some Travers recap from Jay Pribman too, but a little bit of looking back, a little looking forward with James Scully next. Ahead also, of course, Priv and Byron King, as sort of mentioned and heralded by Marty, and Byron doing the morning line. I'll have to ask him about that 7-2. Byron's going to join us. Dave Grenig to close out Saratoga 2019 as well. Hammer, DeRosa, and Nick Tamaro. There's your lineup. And I got to get you some beat pick information. The last three opportunities to qualify for the big finale, the big championship that'll send one of you to Vegas with an NHC seat to represent us. And you have to beat me to get that $1, by the way. For those of you that are going to sign up for a dollar, you have to beat me. You can't win with me. So if you've won with me, you got to try to find the winner against me these next 3 days to get that dollar. Otherwise, you got to pay 50. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
In the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Are you ready, Boots? Start walking!
We're back at the races. About 15 to the top. James Scully was here in Saratoga last week, one of his favorite weeks of the year, visiting any racetrack, and we say good morning, James Scully.
Good morning, Steve. Yes, thanks for having me. It was great weather-wise, great racing, really just always a fabulous time up there, and you know, I actually had a chance to go to the backstretch and watch a couple races. Really, I hadn't done that all the times I've been up there, so yeah, it was a lot of fun this year.
Well, back on the backside's a lot of fun to watch. You know, you get to, you know, particularly watch the sprints. The horses leave right from, you know, right in front of you from the gate, and then you also got the food stand back there is terrific.
And, oh yeah, you got those prices are yes. Really great too. They're lower than you'll see anywhere else.
That's very true, and they got the mutual, you know, the backstretch mutuals back there. A lot of people that, you know, once they've experienced it, they you know, they end up watching from there, and you're not the first to express the pleasure of watching from the backside. And there's plenty of monitors. It's not like you know, you're not going to see what happened. You'll know quick enough. Plus, you watch them gallop out, which is kind of cool too. You get to see them come around galloping out, and you know, they pull up, and jocks will talk to you over there. It's kind of fun. I agree. Good call. Good job.
Yeah.
Let's get some feedback. Your thoughts. How'd the wagering go? How was the seminar, by the way, over at Trackside Grill?
Oh, seminar went great. Yeah, did had Travis Stone there, and we went over all the stake races on Saturday morning. And you know, he's just so polished and really knows his stuff. So I thought it was a really great discussion. And you know, you know, I built a lot of bets. I did okay. I had a turned a little profit on Thursday and Friday. Didn't do any good on Saturday. I built a lot of my multi-race bets on a late. Was, you know, against Midnight Bisou, stretching out the mile and an eighth. You know, I thought our last race was a little bit workmanlike. But, you know, Steve Asmussen had been saying leading up to the personal incident that she had been training better than at any point in her career, and he was on the money. That was really a remarkable race, remarkable to see her drop back and then run down a late who was coming in off just a smashing win. It is one thing about a late that is the fourth time her races have been decided by a length or less, and you know, she's run second all four times. So, I mean, a super classy mare, earned more than $2.2 million, but that's a little bit of a troubling facet with her.
Yeah, can't argue. Talk about the three-year-old action, the way things unfolded in the Jerkins, and I can't remember what we talked about last week. What your approach was going to be to Chancelot?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Chancelot could regress off that effort and still win. And you know, it was funny because the first dirt race of the day, they had some turf races early, but the first one was that 6-furlong maiden race, and Tappet, Tis the Time, or I might be missing that name, but Kathy Colt re-rallied up the rail to win, you know, real impressively, and it looked like the inside was pretty good that day. I think it got worse as the day went on. I don't know if it was extreme, as some people are you know, talking about it, but definitely I was surprised to see Chancelot give up that lead. I thought it was a real reasonable pace. It wasn't as if Mind Control, I mean, he just grinded it out, you know, right in the final jumps. But, you know, with the Coat of Honor, I mean, just really, I think, you know, with him, like in the Fountain of Youth and in the Florida Derby and then in the Kentucky Derby, really impressive moves. He really accelerates well, corners well. Didn't like necessarily, especially in the Florida Derby and the Kentucky Derby, came up a little bit short in the lane. That was a concern of mine going in the Travers, but it was an unconventional approach by Sugar McGahee to go from the Derby to the Dwyer, which he won impressively, but it was a one-turn distance. And this time he carried it. You know, four Travers wins for Sugar McGahee, just phenomenal job. And I think with Tacitus in there, Steve, I think he would have run second with or without the blinkers, with or without an inside trip. I still think, you know, that race is another good example where, you know, approaching deep stretch, it looked like Mucho Gusto had gotten the best of him and he was going to be third, and then he came again late. I don't think he's completely focused in his races, and I'm still, like, hopeful that he's got the potential to really put it together and move forward for Belmont going forward.
Well, somewhere, you know, he's going to win his share of races. And
you know, yeah, and it looks like Judmont's going to race him at four, which I think is
yeah.
great. So.
Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't you? And I don't want to invoke Dollar Bill, but maybe use him as a, you know, as sort of a cautionary. I think Tacitus to this degree is accomplished, maybe accomplished more, but I always remember, you know, being convinced at some point along the way that Dollar Bill couldn't win, and you know, and then sort of being dismissive of him when when he ended up winning the biggest prize. So you know, you just look at each race individually and don't, you know, just don't make presumptions, and actually that's a cautionary advice, I think, on a number of horses out of the weekend, including, as you mentioned, Midnight Bisou. And you know, there was that trope going on, the mile and an eighth will be the difference maker. Code of Honor, mile and a quarter. How much better could he have run in the Derby? Come on. It's just silly. Don't make presumptions about horses. Just wipe your glasses every single after every race and look at them on paper, you know, when they assemble next.
Yeah, don't overthink it, I guess.
Yeah, somewhat.
But still, you know, there was some Annals of Time, you know, really a big race by him. It's, you know, that horse, too, you know, he's still, I mean, what a remarkable job to come back from an 18-month layoff. You know, both both he and Bricks and Mortar, you know, were both horses that terrific this year for Chad Brown. And, you know, just talking about Chad Brown, it's like, and I know we're going to, like, turn a little bit to Kentucky Downs, but, you know, they're giving away – to me, he's got almost, I think, 159 starts going into the final 4 days. He's going to start almost 200 horses at Saratoga. He's almost 25 wins up. He's going to have an all-time record thing. But he has got to have a C string of, like, turf horses, especially Kentucky breds, that he could point to Kentucky Downs. He's never run any horses in those stakes, and they're just giving away. I mean, they're giving away more than $3 million tomorrow in purses. And I was looking at their noms list, and he only has one horse, Made You Look, that's in the Kentucky Downs Turf Sprint that even nominated this year. So I just think, like, some of those owners, you got to question a little bit. They're leaving some money on the table potentially.
Well, the owners actually the owners are part of the directive to not go
targeting Saratoga. Yeah, I mean
they've got a different set of priorities, and it's a conscious collective decision for them to not be there.
Right. I just wonder if that's going to ever change. I mean, it might, with these purses, it just seems a little bit, it's like, I mean, he could find, you just wonder, I wonder if he could find 10 horses and, you know, run them in stakes. Even if they ran early in the Saratoga meet, you could perhaps point towards some of these races because, I mean, you know, you're running for $130,000 for maiden special weight races, and $150,000 for the allowances. I mean, the purses are just unreal.
Yeah, the weekend before we talk Kentucky Downs, James, let's get a couple of thoughts in about the big stakes card at Saratoga tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, really with the Woodward. I mean, with Yoshida coming back, you know, he really, you know, didn't run, you know, he was in real tough fields, but he didn't run, you know, didn't show much kick in his first three starts this year. But that was a good second last time to McKenzie, who's the Breeders' Cup Classic favorite right now. And you got to figure he's going to take some action off of that race. It highlights a stake schedule where you have the Prioris. It only got a short field, basically all the, and then two turf races, the Saranac and the Glens Falls at a mile and a half for turf to Saffers. But my thought in the Woodward is I look at that race, Steve, and to me there's you got Preservationist who really, you know, ran a big race at Belmont, two back-to-back big races at Belmont Park, including the Suburban, and he was racing on the front end, but he's not necessarily a need-the-lead type. He's very willing to sit second or third. On the outside, you have Tom Satat, who's a sort of a similar run style, be more than happy from that far outside post to sit second or third. And there's a horse in this Woodward, number one, Mr. Buff, that to me is coming into the race in just career form. He's never been better. Prior to that Saginaw, he had lost six straight races at Belmont Park. And he just opened up, I thought, brilliantly on the far turn that day on the field. And then even last time in that Evan Shipman where he's, like, you know, contesting that early pace, I just loved his move on the far turn to open up on him. And I think that 6-for-8 at 9 furlongs, it's been a disappointing meet for Kimmel. You know, for 22 starts, he has no seconds and only one win. But Mr. Buff, he could change the feeling over there big time. And I like him wire to wire. I'm going to take a little stab. I'm going to take a stab with him in that race for an upset with Jose Lescano, and he's my pick in the Woodward Stakes.
I use the Woodward as tomorrow's. We got three editions left of the Beat Pick contest, and I use the Woodward. I'm picking Mongolian Groom, and Mongolian Groom is coming in here on the 2 weeks turnaround from the Pacific Classic, so he's cutting back. Most importantly, he's going from that beach at Del Mar, literally the beach, where you heard most of the East Coast horses come out there and basically struggle to get over the racetrack. He's going to get here tomorrow, and it's going to be like a paved highway for him compared to what he's been working over and running over. And the addition of Luis Saez is just an absolute blessing. This horse has got plenty of speed, and if Mr. Buff is going to set the pace, he can sit very close. And I think he gets first run on whatever's going on there and is going to end up being a little tough to catch. I imagine Tom's the Tot is going to, sit second, third with him if Mr. Buff is the pace setter from inside. But either way, whether it's Mr. Buff wiring or one of us or both of us together can take advantage and both be big prices. I just didn't want to take a short price in here, essentially.
And I like that move that Mongolian Groom made last time. I mean, it really doesn't show in the PP lines, but I thought he made a nice move on the far turn to loom up, and then Higher Power went on with it. But, in both that race and the San Diego, he was able to put himself in a prime position, I thought, where he came up a little bit in the short in the stretch against good horses, but definitely his form has improved significantly in those races from prior efforts.
A couple of other thoughts, James, and let's get to Kentucky Downs as well.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this first race of priorities as part of the Pick Five. It's a short field, and everybody's looking at it as just a single with this break even. But I'm a little bit concerned by the fact that, hey, she's just been on clear leads, and she's gotten a little bit late in both that Jersey Girl and Coronation Cup. I know why Cox ran her in that race, because he had Covfefe for the test. But this break curfew is eligible to go with her right from the start. I think the race will set up. I mean, Risky Mandate has to step up and show her class. But I've liked what I've seen from her, and I'm going to use her to try to beat the odds on favorite in there.
Fair, okay.
And then the other one that I really, I'm in the Glens Falls. I mean, Fool's Gold has got really good for Chad Brown. I think she's very logical in there. But in the Saranac, the horse that I liked was that Rinaldi. I liked his last race, and I'm going to give him the edge in the Saranac.
Very good. Let's talk a quick Kentucky Downs survey, James, and what's your approach for people generally? We had Marty on earlier and Hammer later and Byron King. I want to get everybody's approach for those that are going to be playing Kentucky Downs for the first time. It's not like anything you've ever seen.
Well, yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I'm sure you guys mentioned it, you have to respect Maker right off the bat. I mean, he has just been such a dominant presence in those races in years past. I'll tell you one thing I'll be watching for always. In those sprints, they're basically starting at the top of a hill, and a lot of times speed or horses with tactical speed run real well in those races. So that's like something like earlier on the card, they have a sprint in there, and Tyler Bays has a mount on a horse. I think it's in race number three, Zip Your Lip, who's 8-1 on the morning line, and I think she's going right to the lead in that race or right on it. And has the right run style for that 6.5-furlong sprint distance.
Nice. How have you done historically there? And I can't remember our conversations about Kentucky Downs over the years, frankly.
I mean, I've been there every, last 3 years, and I think one day I did really well, another two were, a struggle. I mean, it's a tough handicap in there, full field, it's horses coming in from all over the place, but, it's one of those two where you just need to, be right with one race potentially to cover everything else.
I mentioned to Marty that looking at last year's results, sort of runs counter to the general expectation there. People think, the big fields and big prices, but it really wasn't the case certainly last year. And the favorites won a third of the races, and horses 5-1 or less won 2/3 of the races last year. The prices, if they were coming, came underneath. So one of the things I just sort of threw up as a caution flag is that you don't necessarily have to be, reaching and just trying to beat every favorite. If there's logical horses that look like they're going to be imposing, you may be well served to just acknowledge that and use them appropriately.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. I mean, you're always going to have opportunity with the vertical exotics to catch a nice ticket because of the field size. For sure. And I'll give you some quick thoughts on the four stakes. The old stakes pick four. It starts in race seven with this One Dreamer. I respect Lamari. She's kind of I'll use because I think this freshening is going to do her well. I think, off of that Mitchell, of that trouble trip in there, she just didn't fire in that Indiana General Distaff. I like the freshening. But a horse I'm also going to use in there is the 8 horse, Knopf Holly Spirit. And my angle on that is I really liked her race there last year in her lone start there. She ran against Peru, who beat her that day and came back and won the Claiming Crown. Tiara, like two starts later, was in really good form last fall. And now Polly Spirit really made a nice mental move in that race. Looked like a winner, turned it for home, and finished a clear second. That was a really big effort on the course. I think she's moved forward this year for Correa's. I know in her last couple races, she was in, she didn't necessarily fire, but I mean, I thought she was, her races, I still think she's got the right run style to take advantage if the pace is hot under Joe Bravo.
Nice. Nacho Correas and the 8 horse in that 7th race that starts the stakes action, the Taurus Mile.
Yeah, and the Taurus Mile, I mean, race is just loaded with speed. I mean, you got CM Rip, and you've got Great Wide Open, Real Story, and some other ones in there that could be putting pressure on in the middle stages as well. So, to me, the race is you've got to respect the heck out of Hembree. Really a sharp score last fall. I liked how two races back he ran that real big race in that Forbidden Apple to just miss. And, that 4-star Dave last time, he didn't fire his best race, but, he did pass some horses. So, he likes the course. He's going to be super tough. The other horse that's intriguing is Parlor. He's run well over the course before. And I just thought that was a huge effort, too, back in the wide stand. I see that last race at Delaware. It's just a confidence builder. So he's coming into the race in the right way, Freddie Keneally, it looks like to me. So I'm going to use Hembree and Parlor in the Taurus Mile.
Yeah, Marty also is on Parlor. So 2-for-2 on the 12-to-1 shot. Nice. How about the 2-year-old events?
The 2-year-old events, Maker's tough in both those races. He's got a pair in the juvenile fillies. Ask Bailey. I really, I thought that was a sharp win last time. The fillies run away at Hodge, a solid turf sire, being by City Zip, and all this turf. A really nice filly, female family. I'm sorry, but a horse that I'm picking on top is for Romans, number 11, Lemon Scat. I thought that was, I watched that first race, really a sneaky, really a solid effort. And then last time, really liked the turn of foot he showed just to put that field away, a win going away. I think this filly has a big upside. Martin Chuan, I think he's from China, 5-for-22 at Ellis with 4 seconds at 4/3. So this kid can ride. He's been up on this filly both starts. And, at 6-to-1 on the morning line, she could even drift up because, like I said, Asmussen, 2 Cassies, 2 Makers, there's a lot of contenders in that race that are going to take action.
And That gets us to the boys.
To the juvenile, yeah. Gainsway Farm Juvenile Stakes. And this one I will go with Maker. I thought that, are you kidding me? I thought that was a really nice win that day. Kitten's Joy Colt, you know, looks really tough. I did look at number 11 a little bit. Sorry about that. That's my dog. Beyond Gone. You know, ran both times on the dirt. And this dam is a half-sister to Del Mar Oaks winner Lizzie Hare. So I thought that colt might be eligible to take to the grass and run a good good one off that maiden when it's Saratoga on the main track.
That's another Marty McGee lean. I expect Dale's horse to run well first time turf, nighttime by Majestic Perfection. And there's also some turf on the bottom side. James, I appreciate it. Off and running at Kentucky Downs and wrapping up at Saratoga as well. Thanks for great summer coverage.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Good luck this weekend.
James underscore Scully 111. If you follow up James on Twitter, just past the top of the hour, actually 10 minutes in, and we'll make a quick turnaround, come back with Jay Pribman. We'll get Jay's Travers thoughts on the three-year-old front and how it affects things going forward toward Pennsylvania Derby and more. And then we'll close out the Del Mar season two and get Jay's thoughts back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You've got an open heart, so you share what's inside, thinking that all is said in confidence, but then you realize
we're back at the races, 15 into hour two on the weekend preview. But before we can preview, we have to review. Jay Primman of the Daily Racing Forum, standing by. Good morning.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Very good. Here we are at the end of the summer. This one flew by. And I imagine for people that actually got to see it, it went even faster.
Yeah, this is definitely the lost summer for you. But no, it's been a good summer out here at Del Mar. It's been good racing, safe racing, knock on wood. So hopefully things will continue through the end. And it's been a very refreshing story arc so far.
Very much. And I know just from what I'm hearing, you know, from connections and from you know, from trainers and so forth. I mean, they've really been reinvigorated by you know, after just an arduous winter and spring. And of course, there are some pending questions, but we'll leave those for a couple of weeks down the road. Before we talk about the closing weekend at Del Mar, Jay, I want to get your Travers reaction. Certainly a storied and familiar horseman earning a fourth Travers.
No, it was great for Shug McGee. He's done a tremendous job with Code of Honor. I think if you just go back and look at the whole development of that horse and his relationship with John Velasquez, going back to the spring, was writing about that horse and some of the lessons they were trying to impart on Code of Honor in terms of getting him to settle, getting him to make one run. All of that work between both McGahee and Velasquez certainly paid off on Saturday with the way he performed in the Travers. So it was a fun race to watch. It was a good field, big field, and it was a very enjoyable race.
Were you surprised that he won with the authority that he won?
Yeah, I guess so. I thought it was. I wouldn't have thought anybody would have won off by three lengths in that field. So, but I mean, he got the right trip. He rallied in the best part of the track, and he's obviously a horse who has made, as good as he was in the spring, he's even better now. He's made significant steps forward. So. And hopefully he'll continue to make those steps forward as he goes into the fall and runs against older horses in races like the Jockey Club Gold Cup.
Heading into the fall, and with, of course, things like the Awesome Again and the Jockey Club Gold Cup and everything else that'll lead into the Lucas, all the things that lead into Breeders' Cup, we do have one major three-year-old race remaining in the Pennsylvania Derby. What did this do to the three-year-old champion race? And, you know, what do you foresee, Jay, in this really fascinating mix and match three-year-old season?
Well, I mean, there are several horses still with a claim to the title, but nobody, I think, has asserted themselves as the clear-cut divisional winner. And a win against older horses could go a long way towards tipping the scale. So that's why a race like the Jockey Club Gold Cup, for instance, let's just talk about a horse like Code of Honor. I mean, if he were to win that race, that would be a huge aspect to his resume. To your question about the Pennsylvania Derby, I mean, you know, hopefully Maximum Security will make the race, but you know, I'm a huge fan of Brett Calhoun's colt, Mr. Money, and I just think that he is sitting on go for that race. It's time for him to step up and run against the big boys, and I think he's ready for it, and I think he's going to put himself right into the thick of the conversation of top three-year-olds. That race is still a few weeks away, but I'm very bullish on that horse.
Well, aside from the also rans in the Travers and the Travers winner and everybody that's going to reconvene at Parks, we also are keeping an eye on Game Winner and Omaha Beach. And a lot of speculation last week on Omaha Beach's next stop. And I thought that Mandela made a logical decision to not be as demanding on Omaha Beach's return with the thought of shortening up a little bit and a one-turn try. Talk about what's going on with Omaha Beach.
So, right, he got back on the work tab yesterday and worked well. And the plan now is to, assuming he doesn't have another hiccup, and hopefully he won't, he's had enough already this year, would be to come back in the ACAC at Churchill Downs, which is on the same day as the Awesome Again, but as you were alluding to, it's a one-turn mile as opposed to the two-turn mile and an eighth of the Awesome Again. And when I talked to Mandela the other day, he just said that he thought that was just thought the one-turn mile was just a smarter way to bring him back off of layoff. I mean, don't forget now, he hasn't had a race since the Arkansas Derby. So it's been, by the time he races, it'll have been more than 5 months, and he just thinks that a one-turn mile is just a better way to get him back, and then you can go from there, as opposed to running him against the likes of McKenzie and going a mile and an eighth first time off a layoff.
Well, looking forward to getting him back in action. And before we talk about what went on in the shared belief over the weekend at Del Mar and Improbable, what Game Winner, very quiet on the Game Winner front.
Yeah, no, he was spiked a fever as well, and he has not gotten back to breathing yet. So hopefully he can get back to work soon, but he's going to need to. So we're just waiting to see what transpires with him.
Well, talk about the shared belief result, and Improbable comes back, earns a big fig, and also the Hollendorfer that was chasing him home very quietly, I thought, ran a big race.
Yeah, that was King Jack. He was second best. It was only his third start, though, and was a good performance on his part. But you're right, Improbable got a career best fire fig of 104, so it was certainly a strong performance for him in his first start since the Preakness Stakes. And now he'll go forward and see if he's another one who can throw his hat in the ring as a top 3-year-old for the latter half of the year, if he can win a race like the Pennsylvania Derby or beat older horses, something like that. But the dirt mile is definitely what they have on as a year-end goal for him.
And I really did not see anything from Baffert this week, Jay, regarding Pennsylvania Derby plans. And of course, he had to be pleased with Mucho Gusto's good try, last minute addition to the Travers lineup, and comes back with another Grade One placing.
No, certainly Mucho Gusto ran a very good race. As we were talking on the show last week, I think a mile and a quarter might be just a touch beyond optimum for him, but I thought he hung in there really well. He was right in the thick of things till deep stretch, and traded a couple of bumps there with Tacitus, and was just third best on the day. But he's obviously a very good horse, but I think he would be better suited by a slightly shorter trip back to maybe a mile and an eighth or so.
Fair enough. Well, there's your 3-year-old picture. I think it's safe to say, Jay, closing weekend on both coasts, Saratoga and Del Mar, really a showcase for 2-year-old racing.
Very much so. At Del Mar, you've got the debutante on Saturday, and then the futurity is Monday. You've got, for us, we've got a couple of grass races for Colts on Sunday and for Phillies on Monday that are races that could move a horse along towards the respective Breeders' Cup races this fall. So a lot of good 2-year-old racing.
Anything you want to touch on from closing weekend for Del Mar?
I mean, there's like 6 stakes and 4 of them are graded. What do you, I mean, you tell
anything.
2 of them are grade 1. You tell me.
Not so much for Del Mar. I pretty much was focused over here, and a little, you know, I had to keep an eye on Colonial and Kentucky Downs as well. So I'll put it in your hands.
Well, the debutante is tomorrow, so you've got the better 2-year-old fillies in that race, including the horse I think to beat is Inspiressa for Sadler. She won her one start. She beat Bast, who has also run once and is going to run as a maiden in that race. But why not? If you were second best to the horse who looks like she's the favorite, then you got to take a shot. But there's several others in here that are of good quality. Lucathia won very nicely in her first start on this circuit after coming in from Kentucky and adding blinkers and Lasix. Pure Zena's one run was quite good. You've got Stellar Sound, the Tappet filly, who won nicely but didn't get much of a fig, and Lazy Daisy, who won her lone start. And you've got Comical, who ran poorly in the Sorrento but won the Schuylerville back there. So it's a pretty good race. Unfortunately, Amalfi Sunrise got hurt and is not going to make the race. So the filly who ran second to her in the Sorrento, Powerful Attraction, should be running late. But I think the race is the race goes through Inspiressa for she's the big beast filly that Sadler trains, who went for a huge number at the 2-year-old sale earlier this year. And then the Futurity Monday is the other grade one, and Baffert will be going for his 15th Futurity win with the favorite in the race, Eight Rings, the Empire Maker Colt, who won so nicely first time out. But Doug O'Neill's got a couple of horses in here that I think can run, most notably Defense Win, so I think it's just going to do better with more distance. Maybe Monday's just not quite going to do it for him, and he'll be better going two turns, but I think this horse has quite a bit of talent. Baffert's also going to run Garth. You've got Storm the Court, who won Gamely first time out for Peter Urton. You've got Ginobili, who won in his second start last time out for Baltus. And Peter Miller's got a couple of prospects, including Wrecking Crew, who's had two races already this meet. He won nicely on debut and then ran a decent race in the Best Pal last time, but he would be suited by getting, A, off to a better start, and, B, I think an outside post. He's had inside draws, and I think if he can get an outside post and the extra distance, I think it'll help him as well. So those are the leading contenders, at least in the two grade ones.
Very nice. And a couple of notes on the 2-year-old front. Express Train. Nice to see John Sheriffs with a big 2-year-old.
He's got quite a few. I mean, as I told you before the meet started, he had some pretty good prospects. We wrote about him a little bit in my pre-meet story on 2-year-olds. That he had a little more ammunition at this time of year than you'd usually find for somebody as patient as he is. And you know, Express Train won big on Wednesday, and that really flattered the form of Eight Rings, who's going to be the favorite, as I mentioned, in the Futurity on Monday, because Eight Rings beat him pretty handily, and Express Train was well clear of the rest of the field, and then he came back and won big on Wednesday, so that certainly franks the form of what Eight Rings did first time out.
Well, and anxious, always happy to see John with that kind of a quality, and look forward to talking to him about it. He also had that Caressa win last week. He's had a nice, you know, even the ones that didn't win right away have run well. He's hit plenty of boards with those maidens that'll be running back at Santa Anita. And Jay, we also had the 2-year-old yesterday, right? There was a 2-year-old. Yeah, the 2-year-old stake yesterday. There it is. The generous portion for the Calbreds. Been studying her, and Jerry Hollendorfer gets his second win of the meet to go forward toward the end here. And he's got Basilica, of course, in the John Mabee tomorrow.
Right. Yes. The Mabee's the good race for older horses this weekend. And really got a nice field. It's a really good field of older females on the grass. She didn't draw that well, did Basilica, because she's marooned in the outside post. So, or excuse me, I misspoke. she got running too late last night. She drew well this time. She drew the rail, so she should get a good trip from down there. But I'll give you a couple horses in here who I think are going to give her a run for the money. I really like Toinette. I just think she's a top-class filly. She came off of a long layoff and won nicely last time for Drysdale. And I think Juliet Foxtrot's going to be very live shipping in for Brad Cox. He made the same move with Beau Recall, who won earlier in the meet here in the Yellow Ribbon. Juliet Foxtrot is 3-for-3 in this country since coming over from Great Britain and steps up to Grade 2 company for the first time, but she certainly looks like she fits real well in here. So I think even though Vasilica is the horse to beat, I do think there's a couple others in here who are going to be very, very tough for her to down. And I would, if you're playing this race in the sequential races, I would definitely use Toinette and Juliet Foxtrot.
I like it. And a lot of familiar faces in here, too. LaForce and Pave and more. Alicia's World, been with Baltus for really the whole year. And nice, you're right, this is a nice group. The John Mabey, the Grade 2, which goes as the 7th and starts the late pick 4. Jay, I appreciate it. We'll put a big bow on the summer next week.
Sounds good. Have a good closing weekend back there, Steve.
You too. Home game coming to an end for DRF Pridman. We're at the midway point, 90 in, 90 to come on this weekend preview. Byron King next, Dave Grenig to follow, Hammer, Ed DeRosa, and Nick Tamaro. Weekend preview continues here on SiriusXM. Stay with us.